spatech.net. I'm Rio Pacino. I'm here speaking with Al Alcorn, the innovator, creator of Pong, probably the greatest Atari game in history. Speaking of Pong, what did you think? Did you think Pong would become what it actually became during the time you developed the game itself?
No, when we were building Pong, it was absolutely just an experiment. It was a trial to get to practice and how to make a game. But Nolan didn't tell me that, and it was the simplest game he could think of. And he stole the idea from Magnavox, and it was a bad idea from the old Magnavox Odyssey game. But he figured once I finished doing that, because it was so simple, just one moving object, score, minimal everything, that we would move on to a real important game, a more difficult game that would be the big one. However, in the process of making Pong, I didn't tell me that, so I made it a pretty good game. We put it on location, and it was a big hit, and the rest is history, so we changed.
Now, playing the game, it seems like it's very simplistic, but at the same time, it's innovative and fun. To me, playing the game, it seems like there's a sort of a tennis influence into the game. Was that
kind of a ping pong like thing? Yeah, very, very simple. The ball had to speed up as time went by, but simplicity. The other thing about Pong that was unusual to this day, it is a two-player game. If people forget about it, it was the only game ever made that required two people. One person could not play it. So and because it didn't have weird graphics, if you remember back in the 70s and pinball machines, as you could see at this conference here, they really had good-looking chicks and stuff like that. Pong, because we have the money for that, was very understated. So it went into places, and a lot of women and couples played it. It became a very social thing, which I think was one of the reasons it was a success. And the other reason, it was a 25-cent play. And back in those days, you could play a pinball machine for 10 cents. 10 cents was the play. So Pong was good enough to command 25-cent play, which allowed us to, the operators, make more money. So they liked it, too.
Now, what was the process as far as getting this game out there to the masses and marketing the game?
Marketing the game, coin-op games in those days, there were three distributors in every territory based along the jukebox line. So basically, you'd get the distributors, and the distributors would buy it from you, and then they would go out and sell it to the actual operators that would put it on location.
You mentioned some of the other games during the panel discussion, and you said Pong actually wasn't the biggest game in your opinion. What was that game that you were just talking about during the discussion, and what was that game about?
Pong, I think Pong was probably the most important game in terms of the history, because it was the first really commercially successful, viable coin-operated game. There were games before, but the first game ever was really on a CRT, was Space War, done by Steve Russell and company at MIT on a PDP-1. And today they've got a PDP-1 running, probably the only one in the world, at the Computer History Museum up in Sunnyvale, and you can actually play it there. So I was honored to be able to play the original video game, which I think
that's pretty cool.
That was never made any money. That was just something that wasted a lot of computer time in the old days.
Now, what other games did you develop while you were at Atari?
I developed a few other games. Personally, I did a game called Space Race. What was it? One other game, I forget. Very early games, but after a certain point, I became a manager and hired people to do the job. So I would say that, but what I really feel that I did for Atari after that, the first Pong, was I led the team, a small team, that built the first home version of Pong. So the first home video game, that was a major effort, and it was just Pong, but it was in a home player, and we made a custom chip, and that was a real unique thing. It was the first of its kind.
Now, video games obviously blew up in the 80s. Did you expect that to happen, as far as how far the video game craze has gone from the early 80s into today? Did you expect it to be this big?
When we started Atari, I figured it would all die in about 2 years. It never, just men are being extremely lucky to be involved with a project to start an industry. I mean, my goodness, So I didn't expect it was all funny money to me. I couldn't believe any of this was really happening. So I just go along for the ride, and then in 83, when everything kind of tanked, it seemed like it was an overreaction to me, because I thought there was still a lot of play value in video games. And indeed there was. And I think Warner made a mistake in giving up a little completely. But they lost the formula. They could not they did not know how to manage or take advantage of what we could do at that point in time. So the torch got to be passed on to others like Nintendo and other companies.
Another topic that was talked about during the panel that I wanted to talk to you about was the whole game emulation craze. Do you think that's something that benefits, you know, retro gaming, or is that something that's maybe a problem?
Yeah,
what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's, isn't it neat to have started something that has survived to the point where people want to play it so much that they've built an emulator to keep this old stuff alive? It's almost like suspended animation, like freezing your uncle, you know? I mean, they're still there and popping them up. So so other than the shows like this where you actually play the original hardware, which is cool, everybody can play the original games at home on PCs. I mean, I think it's just, I think it's an honor, you know, to do that. Now, some people in business, you're stealing our ideas or something, but nonsense. I think that this whole industry is founded on all invention is founded on borrowing ideas and doing a better job of it, you know?
Now, final question for you, Al.
Yeah.
Retro gaming, coin-op arcades,
pinball
machines. You mentioned that, you know, it's dying. However, there are things like emulators that are keeping it alive.
Yeah.
Where do you see retro gaming, coin-op gaming, pinball machines, where do you see that headed, say, in the next 5 to 10 years?
Gosh. Man, that's a good question. That's a tough question for me. I'd like to see it alive in some areas. I mean, there's obviously a cadre of people that really love it. But to me, the coin-op gaming, the physical cabinet and the old pinball, I liked even the older pinball with the real balls and the mechanical stuff going on. I love it, but I wonder. I see the home games are so visually appealing and engulfing. It's stealing a lot of the mind cycles of people, and they don't want to go. It's a shame, too, because I think there's a social activity to going to an arcade, mixing with other people.
Right.
But unfortunately, I don't see it. I'm not terribly sanguine about it. I'm delighted to see that Stern and there's a few other companies out there that are still hanging in there doing it for a certain kind of an effect. But I think the glory days are gone.
What are you currently doing now?
Oh, my goodness. I'm in another startup company. It's called immi.com. Look it up on the web. We're doing something totally different. I like to invent new things. So 10 years ago, I started a company called Silicon Gaming that did slot machines. This time, I'm doing a company that's doing monitoring, measuring what television and radio station people listen to using cell phones and new technology. So,
well, good luck with that. And
thank you.
Once again, thanks a lot for your time and thanks for the podcast.
Been a pleasure. Nice talking to you.